All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. Next guest on the show today is Nick Terse. He's an investigative journalist, the associate editor of TomDispatch.com, and currently a fellow at Harvard University's Radcliffe Institute. His latest book is The Case for Withdrawal from Afghanistan, which he edited, and he's also the author of The Complex, How the Military Invades Our Everyday Lives. You can follow him on Twitter, on Tumblr, whatever that is, and on Facebook. His website is nickterse.com. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Good, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. I'm very happy to have you here. Wow, so what a great article here. You guys know how this works at the way we do it at antiwar.com. Tom Dispatch at tomdispatch.com, Tom Englehart, Tom Editor. He does a little introductory piece, and then he has the main piece that he's kind of hosting there. And so at antiwar.com, we run them all under Tom Englehart's name. There's a great William Hartung piece there on the site today, but if you just look at Tom Englehart's archives, this is the one before that. All bases covered by Nick Terse and Tom Englehart, and your part of the article is called Empire of Bases 2.0. Does the Pentagon really have 1,180 foreign bases? So, Nick, does the Pentagon really have 1,180 foreign bases?
Well, you know, it's a really good question, and it was one that I was trying to answer. What I'm relatively sure of is that there are no less than 1,077 bases or sites in foreign countries. But by other counts, there are as many as 1,180, and there may well be many, many more. I suspect there are.
Well, let's talk about some of the different ways that you might go about trying to count these things. In fact, this is kind of how your article reads. It's an investigation of how many bases there are, American military bases there are in the world, but it's also kind of the story about trying to find out, too.
Yeah, it's not as easy as you might think. You know, the military does its best to obscure the numbers. And, you know, I had to do a lot of digging around, and this is what I believe, you know, the best count available, but really there's no way to know for sure.
All right, well, tell us about, you know, the research that you did, because it does seem like it's kind of part of the story, not just the different kind of numbers you came up by the different counts, but, you know, where the different counts come from.
Sure. What's really instructive is, you know, when I dug into, you know, how many bases there are in Afghanistan, and this is something that I've covered at Tom Dispatch for the last year or two,
mm-hmm.
You know, just trying to follow up on this was it was a major chore. And it's a microcosm of the larger story. You know, when I dug into this in January of 2010, I was told, you know, this, and it took a while to get to this number, but that there were nearly 400 U.S. and coalition bases in Afghanistan, in addition to about 300 Afghan Army bases there. So when I tried to follow up this fall, I contacted the ISAF Joint Command Public Affairs Office, and they told me there were 350 bases in Afghanistan. So I was wondering where these other the 50 missing bases went. I had expected the bases to grow by, you know, 10 or 15, and now instead 50 were missing. So then I contacted a public affairs officer there, and he told me there were 250 bases. So now we're looking at, you know, a loss of 150 bases, which I was relatively sure really wasn't the case. What I thought was that the military really didn't know how many it had, that they lost track.
It really is like life in a Joseph Heller novel, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
I wonder if anybody, or maybe like that movie Brazil, that Terry Gilliam flick.
Yeah.
You think anybody knows?
I really don't, because you know, I sent back, you know, I emailed back all the numbers they'd given me, 400, 350, 250, and you know, I said, what gives? I mean, you know, you guys really, you have any idea how many bases you have there? So I got bounced around to a couple different public affairs folks, and then they just came back to me and said, oh, you know what, 400's right, actually, and we built another 11 this year, so it's 411. But I got the impression that that really they had no idea, because when I kept following up, they'd say that you know, they sent out a request to lower commands in the field, you know, different command echelons count differently, and it really sounded like no one there had any clue. They were building bases, they were hardening bases, expanding bases. There's construction going on all the time, but nobody bothers to even keep count, because these you know, these numbers are just constantly growing.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is the new math.
Yeah. And I think this has gone on all around the world. You know, the late Chalmers Johnson, he always delved into something called the base structure report, mm-hmm. which, you know, is the way the military tracks its foreign bases. But, you know, when I went through there, I looked at the foreign bases. Right now, they're claiming that the base count actually has dropped in recent years. But, yeah, and they say there's 662 foreign sites right now. When Chalmers looked, there were roughly 100 more. But when you look at the fine print of the report, the Pentagon tells you that if a foreign base is less than 10 acres in size, or they value it at less than $10 million, and they do the valuation, so they can say anything costs, you know, whatever they want. They don't even bother to count it. So we have no count.
Anything smaller than 10 acres, huh? That's still pretty sizable, really.
Yeah. You know, I call them micro bases, but they aren't exactly micro, only by Pentagon standards would anyone consider these things micro.
Right. Well, you know, that actually answers one of my questions, because I think I remembered – well, actually, I'll ask it anyway and let you kind of maybe clarify more. Sure. I saw criticism of Chalmers Johnson and his number, his most cited number of bases, which I think he always said like 750 or something like that, roundabouts, and people always cite that. But somebody said, nah, come on, that counts every rented storage shed in Germany or something as its own little standalone base or something. That's not possibly right. There's actually only this many bases in Germany, and you're calling things that don't amount to bases, bases. But you're saying, nah, they got to be more than 10 acres to even be counted, or at least that's what the Pentagon says.
That's right. You know, I mean, you know, Chalmers took the Pentagon's number. The Pentagon doesn't call them bases, and Chalmers always made this point. They call these things sites. It's just the way they refer to it. And, you know,
so they're really the ones conflating this with that, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, they make it very obscure. You know, I went through and I knew about these criticisms, and I did a count where I tried to remove from the count anything that you know, it was only, you know, could be tenuously construed as a base. So what I did was I pulled out things like family housing complexes, resort hotels, ski areas, golf courses. The Pentagon has all of these, and they're all tossed into the count. Now, even if you remove those, you're still left with 570 foreign sites. Yeah, you know, to use the Pentagon's terminology, overseas, which is, you know, it's exceptionally sizable. And, you know, and another thing a point that Chalmers would always make is that there's so many other places where the Pentagon doesn't count. So, you know, for him to count all of these as bases, I really don't think is beyond the pale. It makes a lot of sense when you're trying to tease out numbers that the Pentagon's always, you know, keeping obscured and under wraps.
Well, as you know, Muqtada al-Sadr's back, and he's saying, no, I'll continue to support the Iraqi government of Nouri al-Maliki as long as he continues to insist the Americans are out, really out, by the end of this year. And yet, I wonder about whether you know how many bases are left there, about perhaps bases in Kurdistan, and what's to be done with the biggest embassy that one country has ever built in the middle of another, there in the heart of Baghdad. I don't know. So I'll ask you that again when we get back from this break. It's Nick Turse, everybody, TomDispatch.com. The other day on the show, Tom, editor, Tom Dispatch, Tom Englehart, that's all the same guy, he said that Nick Turse was the best researcher he has ever encountered. Better even than Chalmers Johnson, who sets the standard. Well, he's the editor of The Case for Withdrawal from Afghanistan. He's a historian, journalist, essayist, and associate editor and research director of the Nation Institute's TomDispatch.com. And he's also the author of The Complex, How the Military Invades Our Everyday Lives. So tell me, Nick, what about the current and the present and future of the American military occupation of Iraq?
Well, we know that that the U.S. had more than 400 bases in Iraq at its height. And as far as I can tell right now, there are no fewer than 88 bases still there.
No fewer than 88 bases still there.
That's right.
And how many combat troops and mercenaries? I guess they say there's 100,000 contractors, but I never know how many of those guys are peeling potatoes or driving trucks or how many of them are combat forces with machine guns.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to tell. I wish I had a number for you, but I just don't. I am relatively sure that we're still looking at 88 bases there. And now Sadr's put the pressure on. So, you know, that's a lot of bases to get rid of in a year. I'll be interested to see if they're really able to pare it down to zero before the end of this year.
Yeah, you know, immovable object, unstoppable force coming together there. You know, I remember when Obama gave his speech saying that he was going to abide by George Bush and Maliki's Status of Forces Agreement and get out at the end of 2011. That Jim Mikleshevsky reported from the Pentagon that, yeah, well, everybody over here says, yeah, right to that. They stole Iraq fair and square, and they're keeping it 15 or 20 years is their timeline. Of course, McClatchy says that the State Department, Hillary Clinton, finally gets to be the commander-in-chief of something. She's building her own army of mercenaries there, I guess, to protect that embassy, huh?
That's right. You know, there's certainly going to be, you know, a major U.S. presence at that embassy, which... I mean, it stretches the term embassy when you look at the setup that they have there. It's really one, you know, it's another mega base of its own. So we know that's going to be there no matter what. And I suspect that somehow, some way, there's going to be a U.S. presence at bases there. Because it's, you know, the Pentagon isn't very good at getting out of places. It's just it's not what it does.
Yeah. You know, I kind of want to apologize to my listeners because I know everybody wants to be over Iraq and let it go. But as long as our government hasn't let them go yet, then I can't let that go. This thing is still on. That's not a bygone George W. Bush Jr. era thing here.
Yeah,
88 bases remain in 2011.
Yeah, I mean, Iraq's far from the past at this point.
All right, so talk to me about the stands. I'm always concerned, you know, Raimondo, I think, is insightful when he says, oh, well, look, if you accept the premise that we have to fight anywhere that Al-Qaeda could have a base, then never mind that means Germany or Florida or whatever, too, Maryland down the street from NSA headquarters where they stayed, the hijackers, I mean. But if you accept that premise, you know, you could make the rhetorical argument, well, that means we have to follow them all the way to in every part of Arabia and Yemen and Somalia. That would be the typical thing. But Raimondo says that means we might have to follow them into Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan and all these stand countries that Americans will never find, even if we are at war with them. And I wonder whether you think that that's a danger, that the bases in those stands will end up being actual war bases, not just resupply depots for the Afghan disaster.
Yeah, you know, it's always a worry, you know, and the Pentagon just, you know, it's always looking for places where it can put down roots. It's always tough to tease out what's going on in the stands.
How many bases are we talking about in Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and so forth?
Yeah, we don't have a good count. It's not something I was able to ferret out. You know, it's you know, I spent some time too trying to dig into, you know, even what's in Pakistan. If you look at the numbers of personnel that are deployed to Pakistan in the military's records, you can see that there are hundreds of troops there in Pakistan. But if you look at the base count, there's none listed. But we know that there are bases where drones, at least one base, maybe more, that drones are taking off from. Because of the reporting work of Jeremy Scahill at The Nation, we know that there's a joint special operations base in Karachi. But these bases in the stands, they're off the map, and they're really tough to to parse out exactly what's going on there.
Well, now they say that AFRICOM has had trouble making a deal to find a country that will host their headquarters. So they're still headquartered in the United States, but it seems like once you, if I understand right, Africa basically being considered less important was divided between the Atlantic, Southern Atlantic Command or something like that, and the Middle Eastern Command, but now it has its own Pentagon Command. It seems like, like any government program, they can only expand from here. Can you tell us much about the American military presence on the continent of Africa?
Well, you know, no one wants to, none of the African nations want to be the home base for AFRICOM. Because of the idea that it smacks of colonialism, and no one wants to be tainted in that way. But the U.S. has troops deployed all over there, all over Africa. And, you know, they have a major base, say, at Djibouti, Camp Lemonnier.
Mm-hmm.
This is, this is where they've had a joint task force based out of there since, right after 9/11. And this is, it's actually an old French Foreign Legion base that that the U.S. took over. Yeah, it really is fitting. And so there's a permanent presence there. And then there's they're always having roving missions in different places in Africa. And they go in an advisory capacity to work with African forces. They're always in as trainers and advisors. So there's a major presence on the African continent, even if AFRICOM itself can't find a home. I suspect it will at some point, though.
All right. Now, a few minutes left. I kind of want to ask you the big why all this. Your book, The Complex, and this work on the bases around the world, and obviously it's America's facing a $14 trillion national debt right now. It seems like there must be, if not a real good reason, a real powerful movement behind this imperialism. But I was wondering if maybe before you address that, if you could sort of sketch the military presence in Latin America these days, because I know it's changed, and I also know I don't know really very much about it.
Presence in Latin America. Well, a lot of the Latin American nations have pushed back in some way, other than places like Colombia. The U.S. is really let its focus has been elsewhere. So I haven't seen much in the way of a digging in there. They put most of their base efforts in what they had referred to for a long time as the arc of instability. So base construction and expansion has gone into, say, the Persian Gulf region with the idea that it might have to get out of Iraq. That's where they've been, digging in right now and expanding bases. So, Latin America is actually, they've been off the hook for a while. They haven't, they haven't had to endure, U.S. bases, U.S. expansion there.
Mm. I guess just Colombia and Costa Rica, and are there more? Or that's about it. I remember the Ecuadorians, I guess you say, kicked them out.
That's right. That's right. That base was turned over. They, the president of Ecuador actually said that the U.S. could keep their base as long as he could put a military base in Miami.
Right.
And the Pentagon didn't go for that. So
what a great line.
Yeah.
Yeah, the American military will run Miami. We were just talking about the article about how they're going to start flying drones over Miami. It'll be in the guise of the local police, but the feds are paying for it. There may not be time left, but this sure seems crazy and extremely expensive, and there's really not that many Soviet unions left in the world to justify, monopoly power in every ocean on every continent. Is it just the greed of the military-industrial complex, or is there any real rhyme or reason behind this other than people trying to reach in the till and get their share of the Pentagon pie?
Well, there's a lot of money in it. The service branches, they're always looking to expand at the other's expense, and none of them wants to give up their base. They want someone else to downgrade their position elsewhere. you know, there's a lot wrapped up in this, but a lot of it comes down, you know, as it always does, to power and money.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sort of seems like it's kind of a free-for-all up there now, and nobody really has any idea. I mean, I don't know if the wise men were ever wise, but now we got either Doug Feith or Michel Flournoy, and it just seems like, you know, who's running things up there? Nobody?
Does make you wonder.
It seems like if anybody was running things, even really terrible people, they would put a brake on some of this stuff because they're cutting the throat of the golden goose, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and a country that's in, you know, has crumbling infrastructure and is in such dire financial straits, you'd think that, you know, at least cutting bases in places like Germany or Japan or Italy would at least, you know, make sense to someone.
Yeah. Well, maybe the thieves on Wall Street have to make sure that the generals are able to thieve enough for themselves that they'll continue to allow them be the thieves on Wall Street. Well, and for that matter, the thieves in the White House. And I'm sorry because I screwed up my cliche. It's the goose that lays the golden egg. And the moral of the story is let him keep laying his golden eggs. You don't have to cut his throat, cut him open, and look for more golden eggs in there. Be patient. He'll lay another one, or she'll lay another one a little while, you know? That's what the American people are, you know? We're supposed to be, but we're just, I guess they'd rather take us for our down and make a pillow, lay down and die on. Huh? You like that? Pretty good. All right. I'm sorry. I'm letting you off the hook. Everybody, that is the heroic Nick Turse. He's a historian, journalist, and essayist, and associate editor and research director for TomDispatch.com. You can find his article under on the basis under Tom Englehart's name at antiwar.com. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Have a good day.